You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's brought to you by MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. Promo code Locked On to get a 50% deposit bonus. Sam Ekstrom, your host, the guest today, Luke Inman. He's a fan favorite. He's on Twitter at Luke_Spinman. He provides videos and writing for zonecoverage.com. He's got the Senior Bowl around the corner. He's hosting the Draft Wrap. He's a busy man, and he's on the show right now. Luke, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Sam. Great to be on, as always, enjoying the bye week. But, you know, unlike the Vikings who are resting, like you mentioned, plenty of action to go. Senior Bowl coming up. Few weeks from now, I'll be in Mobile, Alabama, enjoying the college football all-star game. But, of course, until then, it's all Vikings coverage all day, baby. I'm excited to see what happens during this first round of the wild card playoffs, to see what shakes out and to see who the Vikings face.
Why don't we talk about that right off the top? That's the big talker that everybody wants to speculate on. Which team do you most want to face? Which team do you least want to face? Vikings could face any of the three teams. I think it's a no-brainer. And ironically saying this, but I think you probably want to play Carolina, even though that's the team that beat you. To bring Carolina to Minnesota, I think, would be a much easier game. But also, it would mean that the Rams and Saints lost if you're playing Carolina, because then Atlanta would match up with the Eagles. So you want Carolina. I think the question is, who don't you want? Do you not want LA, or do you not want New Orleans?
I think, and we polled this question quite a bit, not only internally, but to our fans on the Andy, Luke, and Reef Football Machine podcast last night. You can check that out on zonecoverage.com. Some great content and coverage there. It was unanimous. Nobody wants to play the Saints, and I get it. They're the hottest team right now, and I think it comes down to not only their outstanding running game. They're the first team in history to have two running backs to eclipse the 1,500-yard marker from scrimmage. Obviously, we're talking about Alvin Kamara, could be the rookie of the year. And, of course, Mark Ingram, kind of the workhorse, power horse guy in between the tackles. But I think at the end of the day, it comes down to Drew Brees. Nobody wants to face Drew Brees in the playoffs. Drew Brees is obviously one of the best in the league. He's going to be a first-ballot Hall of Famer. He's just got that it factor, like the Mannings and the Bradys and guys like that. And I think when we look back, you know, he's going to be in a class of his own with some of those names I just mentioned. And again, that's the type of scenario and scene in the playoffs when the pressure's on. A time that Case Keenum certainly hasn't gotten his feet wet yet. Do you want to face a guy like Drew Brees? Certainly not. But again, I think it comes back to playing at home. You have to, I feel a little bit better about this matchup, no matter who you play, whether it's the Rams, the Saints, the Panthers, or the Falcons. The fact that we're playing at home, and when you watch our games at home, how dominant this defense has been, specifically the running defense, not allowing anybody to do anything on first and second down, it's why they've broken this record on third down efficiency for defensive performance, is because they're putting these offenses in third and long situations. Can they do that to Drew Brees and the Saints? I think they can at home. But again, if you're making me pick one of these four teams, I agree with you. It's the Saints nobody wants to play.
Yeah, a few notes on the Saints here. Number one, the Vikings allowed 19 points to the Saints in week one. That's the most anybody scored in U.S. At Bank home. Stadium all year. 19
Crazy.
Points. And seven of those were because of a garbage time touchdown. So really, it was 12. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I don't think Vikings fans have really picked up on this, but do we realize that Drew Brees broke Sam Bradford's completion percentage record? Does anyone notice that? He had 72% this year. I'm pretty sure Sammy B's record is done.
Haven't heard a peep about it. How about poor Sam Bradford, by the way? Finally breaks this record, gets all the love, recognition, starts out the season on fire against that Saints game that you just mentioned, and then goes down as never to be heard from again. Obviously, we know he's practicing now, so there could be a quiet comeback there in the making. But breaks that record, and then, of course, goes down this year, and then that record is broken by Drew Brees. What a tough gig this year for Sam Bradford.
Okay, and how about this one? Guess what Alvin Kamara's yards per carry is this year?
It's something insane. It's like college numbers.
Yeah.
You only see these numbers in college, inflated numbers when you get a team like an Alabama or Georgia playing those kind of non-conference Power 5 teams like an Old Dominion or a Richmond Spiders. It's got to be, though, it's like 6.8 yards per carry, something insane like that?
Yeah, it's 6.1. Like anything, okay. Anything over 6 is ridiculous.
Nuts.
I mean, 5 is good. 5.5 right. is insane. 6 is ridiculous. And the crazy thing about it is, to me, I mean, he's got 120 carries. That's a big sample size, and he still has sustained the 6.1, which is ridiculous.
But he's the cutback. He's the change of pace, the cutback right now. And I think when he was drafted in New Orleans, you looked at that pick, you looked at the fit, and you go, oh, my God, this makes so much sense. This is going to be a slam dunk home run. If you knew the talent of Kamara, you knew he was a first-round caliber, but you knew he wouldn't go in the first round because of just how watered down running backs are in this league now in a pass-happy league and how many running backs there were to choose from. You're talking about the Leonard Fournettes, Dalvin Cooks, Kareem Hunts, so on and so forth. He got pushed down a little bit, but the fact that he isn't the focal point and it's Mark Ingram who's doing those carries and he's more of, again, that change of pace guy really puts defenses, I'm telling you, in a really tough spot when he comes in the game and carries the ball. They're just not ready for his explosion. And again, he's got that kind of I'm trying to think of his name, the old Saints, and he went to the Philadelphia
Darren
Eagles
Sproles.
As well.
Darren Sproles?
Darren Sproles.
Yep.
He's got that Darren Sproles type of running style. It kind of hides around these big offensive linemen. And again, I think ultimately he'll probably end up being the rookie of the year. And he's one of the reasons that when you talk about who don't you want to play, the Saints, he's one of the main reasons why.
Yeah, he and Ingram both have over 1,500 yeah. all-purpose yards. That's over 3,000 all-purpose yards between the two of them. So how do you stop the Saints? It's no longer, you know, stop the wide receivers. It's stop the running backs. It's a different Saints team than we're accustomed to. I definitely think that all the top four seeds go on to the divisional round. I think the Rams and Saints both win, don't you?
I think so, yeah. And you know, you look at that Rams-Falcons game. You talk about the running back position. Same kind of deal. Devontae Freeman and Todd Gurley have been outstanding. They're the only two players in NFL that have 3,000 yards rushing and 30 touchdowns over the last three seasons. So when you really hone in on that game, again, like you just said, Sam, it goes back to the running backs, I think. And honing in on that game a little bit more, you know, Rams haven't been there yet. The Falcons just were in the Super Bowl. Matt Ryan, this is a situation he's used to, and the offense, everybody else. I'm interested to see Sean McVay. It's his first time in the big show. Same with Todd Gurley and, of course, the young rookie, Jared Goff, the young quarterback. Is that scene going to be a little too big for them? I don't know. Vegas has them favored by 6.5, which means they think they should pretty much manhandle them. But I think, again, the inexperience of the playoff Rams, that should be an interesting scenario for sure. And then just, again, looking at the broader picture here with the playoff picture, you mentioned Saints and Panthers. They both lost in Week 17. Eagles offense doesn't look like it's going to do anything special here in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And the Vikings have already beaten the Rams. So the Falcons have been underwhelming. I think, you know, on paper, everything's kind of set up here for the Vikings to kind of just walk into the big dance and play the Super Bowl in their home stadium when you look, again, everything on paper.
Yeah, and I agree with you, too, that I think of the two games this weekend in the NFC, I think the Rams are a little more vulnerable than the Saints are. Certainly, there's a discrepancy in experience there between the Falcons and the Rams. That'll be really fun to watch, though, playoff game in the Coliseum. Quickly switching gears back to the quarterback situation, you published a really fascinating poll in your latest Film Notes article where you polled the audience. You said, who do you want as your backup quarterback, Sam Bradford or Teddy Bridgewater? You got over 500 votes, and it's tight, man. It's tight. You got 53% Sam Bradford, 47% Teddy Bridgewater. To be honest, kind of surprises me a little bit. I thought it would be leaning toward Teddy.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, again, you mentioned it, 500 votes. That's not a small sample size. We got a big chunk there, and it was very tight race. Bradford or Teddy goes to show you just how many people are on the fence right now. If something were to happen to Case, who would be the guy to step up? I don't even think the coaches know right now. I think when you look at the situation, Bradford is the guy you've seen the most recently, right? And granted, it was all the way back in week one, but you haven't seen Teddy in so long. And forget about, you know, the one series he played against the Bengals. I'm throwing that one out the window.
Yeah.
Again, you haven't really seen Teddy play a full series and move the ball downfield when he's had to for 2 years. So I've seen Bradford much sooner than I've seen Teddy, but I think the injury concern still of Bradford, is he healthy? Is that knee still going to hobble him? You saw what happened when you rushed him back in the Bear game on Monday Night Football. He looked horrible. He couldn't move around. He was a statue in the pocket. I think that is what people are leaning on with Teddy a little bit more, is the fact that after 2 years, you know that guy's ready to roll. He's spry, he's young, he's hungry, and I think that's the big difference between those two as far as health-wise. So Bradford, again, you get somebody who's played in week one a lot sooner than Teddy has, but Teddy, I think he's healthy and he's ready to go. He's hungry, and I think that's why that poll is so close. Surprised me too, Sam. And to be honest, I don't flip a coin. I don't really have a gut opinion yet either on either of these two. I'd have to see how Sam Bradford looks in practice first.
Yeah, both contain risk, certainly. In Bradford's case, and I've seen him in practice a little bit doing his warm-ups and his rollouts and his tosses, Sam Bradford's game is not predicated upon mobility, so I think he looks like he could probably do what he does. It's not like Bradford needs to roll out too much. He's a pocket passer in the purest sense of the word, sometimes too much. He's too afraid to kind of roll out there. I feel like he's kind of back where he was, at least back in week one. In terms of Teddy, there's more of a mental hurdle, right? I think Sam, he's overcome the knee injuries before. He came back and he had a very nice year with the Vikings after two ACL deals, and now this is minor for him, whereas Teddy has never proven to himself that he can come back from a knee issue and play at a high level, and we're still waiting for that to happen. And while I think maybe Teddy's your better option long-term between the two, maybe you would want to go with Sam in the playoffs just because he is more familiar with executing this offense, and he has played more recently, and I don't think he needs a ton of time to get back up to speed. It's not like he's, again, going to be running with it 12 times a game like he's Michael Vick. All he needs to do is you know, get in his reads, and I think he can do that.
I think so too, Sammy. And you mentioned the mental hurdle of Teddy Bridgewater. Is that a guy that you want to throw in there in the playoffs when your season, everything you've worked so hard for, is on the line? A guy that you just don't know mentally if he's there yet, without any reps, or again, moving the ball downfield in a clutch game time situation drive when the game's on the line like that? When you have a Sam Bradford sitting, waiting in the wings, I think I'd go with Sam Bradford as well. And I think long term, maybe Teddy Bridgewater offers you much more attributes to be a franchise quarterback. I think that, again, in one game, give me Sam Bradford as long as he's healthy, because, again, I think he can do more right now. And, again, you don't have that mental hurdle to overcome right now. And, again, in a one-game, do-or-die, go-home playoff situation.
Luke, I know you're going to love this. This is your jam. Bowl season is here. It's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Just sign up at MyBookie.ag today and get paid fast when you win. It's your hookup for all your betting needs. You can deposit using Bitcoin. That's the new rage as well. Because where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And if you want to make money betting on the bowl games, championship coming up, head to MyBookie.ag. It's the only site I'd recommend. I have complete faith in them. They have great odds on all the matchups. They have live in-game betting on NFL and college football bowl games. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 50% deposit bonus. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Locked on, one word, to activate the offer. MyBookie.ag. Visit today. You play, you win, you get paid. And if you're going to bet, the only place to do it is at MyBookie.
So I wrote yesterday at zonecoverage.com about the Vikings' unsung heroes. Three gritty, players that have kind of flown under the radar this year. They're making a combined like $1.9 million, but I think they've all had big impacts. Their names were Ben Gideon, your starting weak side linebacker in the base, David Morgan, your backup tight end, and CJ Ham, your fullback. Of the three, who do you kind of prefer as the X factor for the Vikings? Which of the three has been a pleasant surprise for you?
Well, there's no question, at least down the stretch during those last few games to really close out. What an amazing run, by the way. 11-1 in the Vikings' last 12 games. What a run they went on. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that only loss at Carolina. I think these last few games to close out the season, no question, David Morgan has done everything that you've asked the guy. You're talking about a small school guy. You drafted him out of Texas San Antonio in the sixth round, a guy that was known for his blocking, PFF's number one tight end when it came to blocking, both running and passing. And all of a sudden, he's molded into so much more than that, just a blocking tight end. He's kind of molded into that Red Ellison do-it-all guy. I know some people compared to him. Hopefully, he can be a Jim Kleinsasser someday. But he's really showing off his skill set in the passing game. You move him out wide. You move him in the slot. You have him in the H-back. You move him, obviously, in line at tight end with a hand in the dirt. And he's been exposing linebackers in the passing game quite a bit. He doubled his catch rate from 5 to 10 in the last two games of the season. And that Green Bay game, when he was called in, when Kevin McDermott, the long snapper, went down, and he came in as the emergency long snapper, guy who's never done it, on Saturday night primetime football, snapping some crucial situations, some crucial field goals, some crucial punts, and the guy didn't skip a beat. He got the game ball after that game. I thought that was really cool to see Mike Zimmer call him out. He doesn't really call individual players out much. In the post-game locker room speech he did with Morgan because he thought he deserved it, and I do too. I think Morgan, what a great draft pick in the sixth round, another steal from Spielman and his scouting staff, that this guy, it's only second year. I'm excited to see what he does in his third and fourth year because he could really develop into such a rounded player, kind of like that, again, Red Ellison or that Jim Kleinsasser type role.
Yeah, and granted, he's only played 36% of the snaps this year, right, but Pro Football Focus has him as the seventh best tight end in football because of the blocking. And as you mentioned, he's been clutch when Kyle Rudolph has been hurt the past few weeks. He hasn't been playing as much. He's been playing hobbled. And Morgan showed that he can fill that Rudolph role in the passing game. Against the Bears, he had a 16-yard catch, a 17-yard catch, and people forget he had a 27-yard catch that got called back because of a Latavius Murray holding call. So really, he should have had 60 yards in that game at 20 yards a pop. That would have been pretty excellent for David Morgan. Five of his 10 catches this year have gone for first downs or touchdowns. He's been a good outlet option when Case Keenum has scrambled. And he had that long, like 9 or 10-second scramble against the Rams where he found Morgan at the end of it. And then he had that scramble against the Packers at Lambeau where he found Morgan for the first down. He's been a nice little option in the passing game. It's fun to watch him develop this year with like 330 more snaps than he had last year to see what he can do.
I think too, just to, you know, end this one and then we'll move on, is that how great is it to have the luxury when you have a starter like Kyle Rudolph that is hobbled but could probably play if you need him to, but you really want to get him rested up these last two, three games that you still need to win, but you don't really want to, again, expose any injuries to some key pieces on your team. To have a guy like David Morgan that you drafted and are developing now, it's his second year, to feel comfortable and confident being able to throw him out there, earn those valuable snaps and game time reps that are going to be so huge for him to go back this offseason and learn from all the tape, to be able to have a guy like David Morgan to just throw into the mix. When we were under the first and second year of the Zimmer era, we didn't have that depth. Now with Spielman knowing exactly the type of guys that Zimmer wants to bring in, you have the depth. When a Sendejo goes down, it's Anthony Harris or Jayron Kearse. We've seen at the linebacker position, the defensive line. If Tom Johnson or Shamar Stephan were to go down, you've got Jaleel Johnson waiting in the wings. There's so many depth guys here that if one main guy goes down, it seems like this year the Vikings haven't skipped a beat. And that was the big difference from last year when the offensive line was decimated by injuries. Sam Bradford never even had a chance. Pat Shurmur couldn't even call half of his plays because he knew Sam Bradford couldn't drop back five steps or seven steps. He didn't have the time. This year, somebody goes down like a Remmers or Reef, Rashad Hill. Undrafted free agent that you plucked from the Jacksonville practice squad. He's looked outstanding. Easton goes down. You got Jeremiah Searles, who's looked more than adequate. I mean, so many depth guys this year that we didn't have the first 2 years or even last year. That's been the big difference for me from last year to this year, and the success without skipping a beat. You don't win 11 of your last 12 games without some great depth, because in this game, you're going to have injuries. And you got to have some guys step up. David Morgan, a prime example of that.
Yeah, they've been marvelous at using all 53 men on that 53-man roster. From top to bottom, the Vikings have developed them well. I want to end with what might be an impossible question, but I started unpacking it a little bit with Sage Rosenfels yesterday, and I want to get your take on it. Who do you think are the top three most irreplaceable players on the Vikings defense? When you look at it, there are just options everywhere, because it depends on what you value. Value edge rushers? Do you value the big defensive tackle who might not necessarily pack the stat sheet, but he's got an intangible impact? Do you value the cornerback or the guy in the back end, Harrison Smith, or the guys in the middle with Kendricks and Barr? If you could try to rank them, and I'm giving you a little time to think here by talking so much.
I don't even need the time. Okay, I mean, I can rip them off right now. The fact that you gave me three and not one made it a little bit easier, but for me, this is easy, and it's funny because I've already thought about this past week, Sam, and it's actually two of my top three guys or guys that got snubbed. Harrison Smith and Linval Joseph are so irreplaceable in this defense. They are the guys that make everybody around them so much better. Linval Joseph just doesn't get the recognition. I understand there's great nose tackles in the league and defensive tackles. Gerald McCoy, Ndamukong Suh, Geno Atkins. There's a lot of them, but Linval Joseph makes this front seven tick. He's allowed guys like Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr to go make plays. He really demands so much attention from the interior offensive line, soaking up two, sometimes three blocks, holding his man at the point of attack, not letting them, you know, get to the second level. He is so valuable. He's such a key piece that when you lose him, it's so obvious. And I think that's how you determine the MVP of the league, most valuable player. What happens when you take this guy out of the team? If you take Linval Joseph out of this team, this front seven is a fraction of what it used to be, and that's scary to think about. Harrison Smith, the same thing in the back end, whether it's making plays at the line of scrimmage or in the back as a center fielder, the guy can literally do it all, and he's one of the surest tacklers in the league. And then my third one, it's got to be Xavier Rhodes, because when you can shut down, before the game's even started, you can shut down the team's number one receiving threat right out the gate, or you know, if you just want to keep him on one side of the field. If you can shut down a third of the field before the coin flip has even happened, that makes such a huge difference. If you take Xavier Rhodes out of the equation, you're looking at Mac Alexander and Trey Waynes. There's no way I feel nearly as comfortable or confident, A, running the schemes that Mike Zimmer's been running, and B, going into a game like the Saints against Drew Brees, because I feel like he's able to pick you apart so much more and find those mismatches like a Trey Waynes or Mac Alexander, and that just becomes so much easier. So without a doubt for me, and no disrespect to Everson Griffin, but you can see that, you know, you can get a Danielle Hunter or a Brian Robeson, and yeah, there'll be a little drop-off, but I think you can still get production if you have Linval Joseph soaking all those guys up in the middle. So Linval, Harrison Smith, and Xavier Rhodes, you take any one of those guys out, this defense looks completely different.
Well, I feel pretty good about myself because my instincts match up exactly with your instincts.
Nice.
And that you're a great football mind, so this makes me feel good. Linval's physical nature, mm-hmm. You can't replace that kind of size. You just can't. You can't duplicate it, and that's a huge intangible. In Rhodes' case, he's just on an island more than anyone else in that defense. You know, if you take Joseph out, you put someone else in, it's harder to judge the drop-off because there's people on either side of him. In Rhodes' case, it's mano a mano. You can always tell the difference in skill level when there's a corner, because they're basically isolated over there. Sometimes they can give safety help, but again, it often comes down to that single coverage. Who's going to win at the line of scrimmage? And Rhodes often does. And then Smith just had the best year, maybe for a safety ever. We'll leave it at that. I think you nailed the top three. And again, it's hard to leave off a guy like Barr or Griffin, but it does seem like the three that we've mentioned are the most unique on the Vikings' defense.
Luke. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to leave out some of those guys for sure. But, you know, gun to your head, if you got to pick one of these guys, you know, three of these guys of the 11, for me, that's what it comes down to. Certainly people could stand up here and make a case for Everson and Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks. I get that. But I think at the end of the day, if you took any one of those guys out, it'd be a bigger drop-off than if you took an Anthony Barr out or if you took an Eric Kendricks out. So something interesting to think about. Linval Joseph, he's pretty underpaid right now for how dominant he is. I expect him to start to think about restructuring his contract. This offseason, we're coming up to, a lot has been made about re-signing the quarterback. Which quarterback are they going to re-sign, and how much money is it going to cost? I'll say this. All in all, the Vikings have done a great job, Rob Brzezinski and Rick Spielman, at putting themselves in good position in the salary cap. This quarterback's going to cost some money. Don't know which one they're going to sign. But that's really about it when it comes to re-signing some guys this offseason. Next offseason, I'm talking about 2019, check out these names. Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, Stephon Diggs, Danielle Hunter, Sharif Floyd, probably gone anyways. Brian Robeson might retire by then. But, you know, just those four names alone, Barr, Kendricks, Hunter, and Diggs, you got some serious restructuring to do, and I think they try to lock up at least one, if not two, of those names before then. But you better start to, again, plan for the future, which Spielman and Brzezinski do better than anybody, so I'm not too worried about it. But it's just some names and some future kind of positions to think about when we're heading into this offseason, because those are some big names that are making some dirt cheap money. You talk about Stephon Diggs making $626,000, and he's probably a top 15 player, so, or at least receiver, I should say. So think about that. Keep that in the back of your mind. Not this offseason, but next offseason. Some huge names and a lot of work for Brzezinski and Spielman to do.
His name's Luke Inman, at Luke_Spinman on Twitter. We kept him a little overtime because he's so captivating and interesting. Give me one name, just one name, someone in the college football championship, a poppin' prospect, somebody that people can watch for, Georgia against Alabama.
Poppin' prospect. Oh, Rokon Smith. He's an inside linebacker. He's undersized. He's on that C.J. Mosley. He's on that Reuben Foster type level. He looked a little scared or a little timid. Wasn't playing 100% the first half of the Oklahoma game. And then you saw him in the second half turn on the gears. All of a sudden, Oklahoma was coming up short of the sticks time after time. This guy should go in the top 12. For some reason, the league undervalues inside linebackers. Like Luke Kuechly fell to 9 or 10. C.J. Mosley fell to 16, 17, that range. Reuben Foster fell to the end of the first. This guy should not fall any farther than that 12th pick, 10 to 12 pick. He's that good. His sideline to sideline agility and lateral explosion is unbelievable, and he's got the instincts. When, like I said, in the second half when he turned it on and he just stopped thinking and playing football, he's on an all-pro level. I would fully expect him, if he lands with the right team, to make an instant impact and be a defensive player rookie of the year early on in his career.
Love that. Just off the top of his head, folks, he's spouting off the knowledge. College football popping prospects. You can hear Luke Inman on the Draft Wrap. New episode dropping tomorrow. The show is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Promo code Locked On to get a deposit bonus of 50%. This is Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review. Put your handle in the review in a Pro Football Focus subscription, possibly. Thanks so much for listening. Sage Rosenfels back with his NFL picks tomorrow.